Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2018 Home Education Conference, held in Logan, Utah.
Okay, this is Dana Wood, teaching Homeschool Philosophies 101 Light. I've taught this class before, and it's a fire hose, and because there's so much information, so I'm going to try and slow down a little bit and give you the bare bones and give you a jumping off place to figure out where it is that you're most comfortable with. Okay, there we go. So just as a background, I've been homeschooling for over 30 years. This is my group. I have two daughters, and I have eight sons. And there's 23 years difference between my oldest and my youngest. So I will be homeschooling forever. And I really know that because I have 14 grandkids and they're all being homeschooled as well. So this is gonna be a never ending, just like you guys were talking about, perpetual influence. So when I first started homeschooling all those many years ago, there were three curriculums and they were all textbooks. They were meant for the private school. And they were not conducive to the reasons that I had decided not to public school my kids. And so I became very frustrated with what I was using. But now there is so much available out there, it's unbelievable. And it can be overwhelming. And you can have a hard time deciding what it is that you want to do. So why should you even care about what homeschool philosophies are? It's because most curriculum is based off of one of these philosophies, and if you understand that philosophy, you're not going to buy books you don't need. You're not going to waste money. I mean, okay, it's a given. You will waste money. That's just part of the homeschool experience, and you will have books in your house that you're like, okay, these books are so horrible I can't even give them to somebody because I will be perpetuating this horribleness of what this book is. Most importantly, it's so you don't have to pull out your hair thinking that you are the problem, that your kids are struggling, and it's not you, it's the curriculum. So we're going to talk about the different types of curriculum, and we're going to talk about how they are put together and why they would or not benefit, whether they would or would not benefit your family. Okay, so what do you look for in a philosophy or a method? First of all, you have to understand, does it fit with my overall idea of what education is in my home? In other words, are you looking to have your kids sit at the kitchen table and everybody does their schoolwork and it's very self-contained? Or do you want to go have fun learning adventures? That is going to influence which curriculum you're going to use. Does it fit into our family culture and lifestyle? If you have a very rigid homeschool philosophy that you're using and you have a loosey-goosey schedule because for us, my husband was in the military, and so when he was in town, we wanted to be able to go and do stuff, and we didn't want to be tied down to a particular curriculum. That's something that you need to consider. Is it easy for me to use? If it's a difficult curriculum for you to use, you're not going to use it. It doesn't matter how fantastic it is. So you have to decide the level of involvement you want in teacher prep as you prepare for the things that your kids are learning. Are my kids happy with it? You can think the curriculum is the most amazing thing in the world. If your kids don't like it, it is not gonna work. If it doesn't meet their learning styles like the previous class, then it's gonna frustrate you and your kids. Am I enthusiastic about using it? When you pull out all the pieces, do you go, oh my gosh, this is gonna be so fun? Or do you look at it and go, oh my gosh, this is gonna be so terrible? And that will influence. You'll do the easy parts of your school and you'll leave the stuff you don't like for another day, which never comes. Am I willing to follow through on all aspects of the philosophy? That's what we're going into today. There's some aspects of this philosophy that you might not be comfortable with. You may decide it's too much work. You may decide, that really doesn't apply to my family. If you're not going to use it, why not? Is it because you need more education? And if you had that education, you'd understand it better and then you would do it? Or is it just not something that appeals to where you are with your family? And then, if you're not going to use it, will you use something else to fill in the gaps? You have to make that decision so that you have a well-rounded, if you're picking and choosing your curriculums, you need to make sure that all the subjects are covered. Does this philosophy require me to learn skills I don't have? Do you have time for that? Am I willing to learn it? Do you need to pick a curriculum that doesn't require, like if you're teaching high school and you really do not have the time to learn trigonometry, then the curriculum that you're going to choose is going to be different than somebody who already has a basis for understanding it and is willing to teach one-on-one with their child. Okay, so we're going to talk about the first one. The first one is a traditional, or it's called bringing the public school home. It's also called canned curriculum because everything you need is in one package. That includes curriculum that is computer-based all the way down to you get this big box and it's got every book that you will use for the year. And all the teacher's materials, tests, record keeping, all that stuff is included. Some of them have video programs, some are computer-based. But basically, it has 180 increments for 12 years, so that someone else has done all the prep work for you. You just sit down with your kid and you do it. Okay, so the strengths of a traditional curriculum. Everything is laid out for ease of use. Very easy for someone who, especially if you're pulling your kids out of school and you're not sure what you're going to do, then a canned curriculum can ease in that year. It follows the standard scope and sequence so that it follows the same thing that the public schools do so that you know you're not skipping anything. It has definite milestones of achievement, so you know when you finish this that you've completed the curriculum. Testing and assigning grades is easy because of the way that the program is set up. Transcripts for college are available through some of those resources. Okay, the weaknesses of a traditional curriculum. It's generally geared to the generic child, so it's a one-stop shopping. Everybody's treated the same way. It assumes that there's a body of information that comprises an education. So this is the amount of stuff that your kid has to know. This is the stuff that we're going to cover. Treats a child's mind like a container to fill with information instead of teaching a love of learning. Different age groups study different materials. So if you're homeschooling a lot of different kids, then it can get really stressful to try and keep track of where everybody is and how they're doing. It can be expensive if you're educating a number of children. This is probably one of the most expensive ways to homeschool is through a traditional curriculum because somebody's already done all the work for you. It has a high burnout rate because kids usually, especially if you have kids that you pulled out of the public school for a reason or you have kids that struggle, this is really a difficult method to use. And because the kids are usually resistant to doing it, it becomes very difficult for the moms to keep up with it. Now, the reverse is if you have a very self-motivated child, then they can sit down and do it.
Can I also point out that there are free options available,
K-12? Yes, there are. Yes. But once you get into the high school levels is when it starts to get expensive. You can get a lot of good stuff inexpensively for K through 8, but once you start getting up into the higher levels, then it starts to have more of a cost. And it also assumes that homeschool is public school at home, and that can be hard to replicate because of the way, you know, they assume that you have 30 kids in your class and you're working one-on-one, and so it can get frustrating. Okay, questions to ask before trying a traditional curriculum. Did my child perform well in a classroom setting? If you have a child that didn't perform well, then this is probably not the method for you, simply because there was something in that classroom that wasn't working, whether it's because they were struggling with reading, or if they were having problems writing, or if they just don't sit, then this is not a curriculum that you'd want to choose. Does my child like to complete workbooks, assignments, and have definite goals? So for a child like this, that likes these things, then this can be a good option for them. Is my child academically oriented? If you have a child who really loves learning and loves learning in self-motivated style and they move through stuff quickly, then this can be a really big benefit. But if you have a child who is pencil resistant, who doesn't like to sit long, then this can be a real challenge for both of you. Am I the type of person who will follow through with lesson plans at the pace of the course? It's very easy to get behind on this stuff, and it's really hard to get caught up without having major tears because, you know, your kid has to sit, you know, you miss 3 days and then suddenly everything's off and than you spend, you know, a week of, okay, we're doing school for 12 hours to get you caught up. It's not a happy place to be. Also, does my child read well and understand what he reads? If your child is struggling with reading, this is not the way. This is going to frustrate him and you, because what you really need to do is focus on the reading problem rather than how much bookwork can we get through in one year. Okay, so now we're on to Charlotte Mason. This is a very popular style of homeschooling. It's a child who's respected as a person. In other words, instead of looking at the child as a student, they're looked at as a person, and you treat them in that respect. Uses narration. Narration is where a child, you read or the child reads something, and then they tell it back to you. Uses living books, no twaddle. So a textbook would be a twaddle book. A living book would be a book that that is based on that subject told from that point of view, instead of saying, okay, like a textbook takes a lot of different people and condenses it into segments. A living book would be a book, like a gardening book would be a living book, because it's going to teach you specifically about gardening. Classics would be considered living books. A child should be involved in a wide range of activities. The Charlotte Mason child will be doing nature studies and a foreign language and habits and handiwork and all of these different things. She believed that young children's lessons should be short, starting with 10 to 15 minutes per subject and then working to longer periods as they age. And so the shorter lessons means that they're focused for that amount of time, and then as soon as their focus drifts, then that's when you end the lesson, and then you pick up right at that point for the next day. And then gradually getting them to learn to focus more, so as they age, they spend more time. Believe that children should have ample time to play, reflect, and create. And she considered that one of the most important parts of the day, is that children get a chance to do those things that our children are supposed to do. They also should be taught good habits, because good habits create a good character, and a good character creates a good person. She also advocated for nature studies. Nature studies is where you take your child out. They keep a nature notebook. You take them out every day, and they go through a park or your backyard or wherever you take them, and they sit and draw what they see. They collect bits and pieces of what they see, rocks, seeds, leaves, and they keep them in nature notebooks. She also advocated taking children to museums and other cultural places to help them see, because art reflects the places that we are, and as children study those things, it helps build their educational foundation. The strengths of Charlotte Mason: treats children as active participants in the learning process. Instead of you being the lecturer and the teacher and talking down to your child, they're part of the give and take of a lesson. Exposes children to real objects and books instead of distilling information. So she believed that if your child's going to sweep the floor, they should have a child size thing to do it with, and they should be part of helping take care of the house and those kinds of things. If you're teaching science, you're going to teach science with real objects, not just, oh, this is a picture, we're looking at this. But actually, if you're studying rocks, go out and collect rocks. Encourages curiosity and creative thinking. It eliminates meaningless tasks and busy work. A lot of the problems with the traditional is that it has a lot of busy work, because it's designed for a classroom and it keeps kids busy while their teacher is trying to keep track of all the kids in the class. It's developmentally appropriate, because the schooling starts at where the child is and gradually increases in time and also difficulty. Stresses formation of good character and work habits. It's considered the gentle way to homeschool. Weaknesses: it tends to be very child-centered. Parents can get lost, and so they allow the child to have more say until the child is the one running the school. May neglect higher levels of study because of the emphasis on the fine arts. It may become too eclectic. In other words, it covers too many subjects and not dive deeply into any one. must understand the philosophy behind her thinking to really implement the program. And so there's a lot of homeschool books out, books about Charlotte Mason out there, and it's helpful to read those. Questions to ask if you want to be a Charlotte Mason person. Am I willing to study Charlotte Mason's principles to use this properly? Having a foundation of her philosophy really helps you implement the program. Does our family love to read, both individually and as a family? Will I follow through on teaching the character and habits portion of the curriculum? Will I follow through on the nature studies and the other fine art studies? Classical education. It's a time-honored method of education down through the ages. Socrates taught through the classical education method. Modern adaptations are often based on the writings of Dorothy L. Sayers. She wrote a book called The Lost Tools of Learning, and most classical curriculums are based off that book. It uses the concept of the trivium to teach. So there's the grammar stage, which is the foundation stage where you're throwing a lot of facts at the kids without worrying about a lot of order to those facts. The dialectic stage is where they start ordering it and figuring it out, asking lots of questions, figuring out where all the pieces that you've taught them distill into. And then the rhetoric stage, which is where they write and read heavily about and learning how to think critically and to express their opinions in a way that they can persuade people. Questions to ask. Are my children intellectually oriented and comfortable with a rigorous education? This is probably the most rigorous method of homeschooling, is classical education. If you have a child that likes to do pirouettes as they're doing their homeschool, this is probably not the one that they're going to be happy with. Am I up to a rigorous education? Because you're going to be learning with your child as you do this, because it requires the teacher to have some idea of what they're teaching. Are my children pencil resistant? There is a lot of writing with this method. And if you have kids that are not happy with writing, that doesn't mean they can't write. It means the amount of writing that they have to sit down and actually do. If that becomes a problem, then they're gonna not be happy with this curriculum. Strengths of a classical education. It's tailored to the stages of a child's learning, teaches thinking skills and verbal and written expression, and has produced great minds throughout history. The weaknesses, it requires a scholarly student and a parent, especially in high school. Like, there's classical conversations this is a method of using classical education, but it requires a real commitment from your parent to be able to get this kind of curriculum through high school. May overemphasize ancient disciplines and classics. You're studying Greek and Latin instead of Spanish and French. Unit studies. Takes a theme or topic and delves into it deeply using all subjects as they apply. So in other words, let's say you're studying earth science. Well, then you would study rocks, and then you would study land formations, and then you would study the people who discovered them, the world was, how the explorers went around and what they saw when they went there, and all of those subjects are all tied into one. Math and phonics are usually taught separately. History is a logical core for unit studies. History provides a framework for study by its cycles of progression. So like the first year you would study the ancient history, and then you would study Middle Ages, then the Renaissance up to American history, and then you'd study modern history. And then you would tie in your other subjects with that. Science fits in nicely too with that. It's family friendly in that if you have lots of kids, then your whole family can learn together, and you just regulate, okay, the older kids are going to be required to do this because it's on their level, and then the youngest child is going to be included in everything that we do and not excluded to go off and do something else. The strengths of unit studies: all ages can learn together. Children can delve as deeply or as lightly into their interests. Rabbit trails are really fun when they find something that you're studying and they decide that they have their own direction that they want to go into. This allows for that. Family interests can be pursued. So like one family that I know, they have a farm, and each of their children have their own animals that they take care of, and they're completely responsible for them. And so that ties into what else they do with their school. Students can get the whole picture. A lot of right brain kids can only learn if they see the big picture first, and then you break it down into the parts, instead of left brain style, which is incrementally, little bit by little bit, until they understand the big picture. So this is a great way for right brain kids to really thrive. Curiosity and independent thinking is generated as the students are allowed to decide what they're studying, how they're studying it, and whatever projects they decide that they want to do out of that. Intensive study of a topic is the natural way to learn. Think of how the way you learn. You decide you want to learn something, and then suddenly everything that you're reading has to do only with that, and you go off on your own rabbit trails about it. That's the natural way to learn, and this is a method that follows that. Knowledge is integrated, so it's remembered longer. So like she was talking about the timeline. So you've got your timeline of your history figures, and then you've got your, well, this person discovered that Earth history is, you know, this about Earth history, and so they remember it because it's tied in two different ways. And then if you have, well, let's study about this particular country because it's got all these mountains in it, then again, it's more something else that they can tie their learning to. So it's history, science, and geography are all tied in. Weaknesses. It can be hard to assess the level of learning. Record keeping may be difficult because you've got all these different rabbit trails that you've followed. Do-it-yourself unit studies require planning, and some people just don't want to take that time. Too many activities can burn mom out. Making all learning fun can make children resistant to book learning, where they have to sit down and focus on one thing. Subjects difficult to integrate may be neglected. Okay, so questions to ask. Am I a creative person able to generate new ideas? Am I willing to live with projects and messy hands-on activities? Do I want my family to learn together? Do my children have a range of learning styles and interests? This is a really a good way to incorporate many different learning styles is through unit studies, because everybody can learn as they feel comfortable, but at the same time they're exposed to how the other kids are learning, and so they can learn from watching them learn. Does that make sense? Do I have the drive to push to finish a unit study? Because a lot of times if you don't have an end to it, it will go on forever and you never get out of it. Okay, the next method is unschooling or relaxed homeschooling. The difference between an unschooler and a relaxed homeschooler is unschooling is totally child-directed, and there's no plan. The kids just decide what they're going to do. A relaxed homeschooler has a plan, but it is still child-directed, and there's more control over what the child is learning, but not rigid control like some of the other methods would be. If you are really interested in it, John Holt's Teach Your Own is what started the unschooling revolution. He believed that the usual method of learning stifled or killed the natural curiosity and desire to learn. Children are surrounded by a rich learning environment with adults who model a learning lifestyle. Homeschoolers who favored definite goals, they call themselves relaxed homeschoolers. Okay, strengths of unschooling. Takes little planning. Captures children's learning moments. Children have plenty of time in the real world and space to figure things out on their own. Children are less likely to be frustrated academically and burned out. Children can delve into learning as deeply or as shallowly as they want. Weaknesses. You may end up neglecting the subjects that a child doesn't like, and sometimes you can't even assess what they have learned and what they haven't. Sometimes it can be hard to discover when a child is stubborn or really struggling with learning, because the learning is so random that it's hard to tell. And the child, you know, you can't tell whether the child is resisting doing any learning and why. Lacks the security of a clearly laid out plan. Some people really need that security and that clearly laid out plan. It's difficult to explain to others, to say, oh yeah, I homeschool, and your kids are out playing in mud puddles in the front yard. So if you have to explain it to somebody, then you probably want to choose something that's a little more structured. It's extremely child-centered, because the child is the one who's deciding what they learn and what they don't learn. It may be overly optimistic about what children can learn on their own. It can also lead to children being homed instead of homeschooled. In other words, they're at home, but no learning is taking place. Okay, so questions to ask if you want to choose this philosophy. Am I comfortable with a few preset goals and little structure? Do my children have strong interests in a particular area? Does my family have a natural curiosity and a natural love of learning? Am I willing to provide structure in other areas of our family? In other words, this is so loosey-goosey that if you don't have any kind of structure in your home, your kids will probably drive you crazy. I know they would me. Okay, principled approach. An effort to restore American Christians' three vital concepts. And those concepts are knowledge of our Christian heritage, an understanding of our role to spread the gospel, and ability to live the biblical principles on which our country was founded. The seven principles upon which our country was founded are individuality, self-government, Christian character, conscience is the most sacred of property, Christian form of government, how the seed of local self-government is planted, and the Christian principle of American political union. Okay, so they take those principles and then they have the four R's, and that's how the curriculum is structured. So the four R's, they do researching of God's word, they do reasoning from research biblical truth, relating the truths to discovering the subjects being studied, and students' character. So in other words, when they see a truth, they write it down in their notebooks as how the student is going to use that principle in their life. Recording individual application of the biblical principles to the subject and to the student. So all of this goes into a notebook, and so everything that your child learns goes through four R's. Okay, the strengths of a principal approach is student learns to think governmentally, students become self-learners, students learn to apply biblical principles to the whole of life, and students create their own textbooks because they're created through those four R's that they do all of their learning through. The weaknesses may present a narrow view of life and history because your focus is on American history, focuses mainly on American history, requires a great deal of teacher preparation because you have to help them discover these principles, do a lot of homework, those kinds of things. It's in its extremely literal approach to scriptures, some people are not comfortable with that. Okay, questions to ask. Do I have real concern for the application of Christian principles in my family and in my nation? Will my child assume responsibility for a great deal of their education on their own? If you have a child that's not willing to do that, this will be a difficult curriculum to pursue. Does my child like to express themselves through writing? Again, if you have a child that isn't happy writing, this is another curriculum that might not be a good fit for them. Am I willing to undertake extensive biblical research and teaching preparation? You can find some curriculums that have already got this put together for you, but it's still got a lot of parental involvement. Okay, then there's the other methods. There's Thomas Jefferson Education. That takes a little bit of all of the philosophies and has it into one. Waldorf and Montessori are, they're pretty much private school based. And so their material is difficult to come by. They don't just have books out there on how to do it. And so they have schools where you can learn to do it, but finding curriculum, it's becoming more open because homeschoolers are demanding that they want access to this, but it's hard to find materials. You really have to go looking for it. And then there's eclectic. Eclectic is where you take a little bit of this and a little bit of that and you put it together and that becomes your curriculum. So now let's go to the handout that I have. Okay, so let's talk about the rules for choosing curriculum. Okay, so as we talked about, what we're trying to do is create a learning environment for our children. And as we do that, we have to buy curriculum. Or we can make it ourselves, whichever we feel more comfortable with. Like I said, when I started, I wrote lots and lots of curriculum for my kids over the years because there wasn't anything out there. But now there is so much that a lot of times it's difficult to make a decision. So the first thing you need to do is you need to invest in yourself when you start homeschooling. And I still do it today. I've been homeschooling for 30 years. I still invest in myself. And the number one way that I invest in myself is 10% of my homeschool budget goes to educating me. So I read parenting books. I read housekeeping books. I read about these homeschool philosophies so that I can pick the best ones or the ones that work best for whichever child is in the need at the time. I read extensively about education, all of those things. That is educating me so that I can be the best teacher. And then the other things that I consider in my homeschool budget is things that I need to organize my schoolroom. My school, we don't really have a schoolroom, which we tried, but it has never worked. But those type of things that are going to make my life easier as a homeschool mom, 10% of my schooling budget goes towards those things. The next thing is consider your situation. If you, like I said, we were in the military, so we moved every few years. And in the process, we have lived in the city, and we've lived in Alaska, we've lived on a farm. It just depended on where we were. And so our situation would be different in each place. So my access to different, if I had access to a library, my homeschool looked different than if I had no access to a library. And some of the places we lived, they had a library of like 15 books. It's like, really? And so as you consider that, take advantage of the circumstances that you're in. If you are in a city where you have access to museums and to all these different amazing cultural things, then go do that. That should be the basis of your curriculum. If you live out on a farm, what can you do to incorporate that kind of experience into your homeschool? If you live in a mix of both, you know, who do you know that could be a mentor to your kids for this year? What skills do they have? And as you look at that, then you can fill in with your curriculum. Does your child like hands-on learning? Are they the kind that likes to get their hands messy? Or are they the kind that, oh my gosh, I've got this gook on my hands? It just depends on that child as to which curriculum you would want to use. And the most important thing is that if you are prayerful about what you want your experiences for your kids, then they're going to happen. And you just need to be watching for those opportunities to happen. The opportunities that my kids have had have been amazing. Like, for example, when we were living in New Jersey, my son, who was a senior that year, really, really, really wanted to be in a choir. Well, there was no choir for him to be involved in. He couldn't be part of the school because they didn't allow dual enrollment. But he really wanted to be involved in that. And so I started praying, Heavenly Father, how do I help him meet this need? When a friend of his who was in college called and said, I'm going to Rutgers here and we are trying to get a choir together and we're missing a tenor. And I know you sing tenor. Would you come and try out? And so he got the opportunity to try out for this madrigal choir. And what I didn't know until the concert that they gave at the end is this was a world-renowned, top-of-the-line madrigal teacher. And he got this experience, and it didn't cost me anything. I just had to get him there. And these kind of opportunities are what homeschooling is about. And you just have to look for them. Another time, I had a son who was a World War II buff. I mean, he just knew everything there was to know about it. But he would talk to me, and I'm like glazing over. But he really, I mean, he was in high school, and this was just a passion for him. And so I just overheard somebody at church talking about they had just gone to Normandy for the Normandy celebration that they had, and he had all this memorabilia, and he was a World War II buff. So I took my son over to his house like two or three times, and they talked it up one side and down the other, and he just thoroughly enjoyed it, and he managed to expand his knowledge and also show somebody, hey, look how much I know. And the interesting thing is that when he served his mission, he served in Croatia, which was right where World War II started. And so he had this great experience of being able to see, he knew that area. He was able to talk to people about the things that that had happened there. And that was a great experience for him. So consider your situation, consider what the benefits of your circumstances, what the people around you, and you'll be able to help meet the individual needs of your kids. Okay, choosing materials that complement the learner. To choose a curriculum, like I've been going through here, that does not meet the learning style of your child is going to be frustrating for both of you, and you're going to waste money. Just because it works beautifully with your friend down the street does not mean that your kids are going to like it or want to do it, and you may not even like it. And so look at that as you choose your curriculums. It's easy to walk into a vendor hall with all these amazing things and want to buy everything. But trust me, there's curriculum that works best for you, and you really need to take some time to learn about your learning styles, your kids' learning styles, and also what method you want to use. Okay, rule number four. If you don't like the material, you will resist using it no matter how good it is. I've made that mistake. Well, everybody else is using it, and we could co-op together if we could all do the same curriculum. And then by October, you're ready to pull your hair out, and you're thinking, what was I thinking? This is not going to work. And so be mindful of the curriculum as you look at it. And it could be that your experience in school is being triggered by the curriculum that you've chosen. And so you look at it and go, okay, I never could do algebra. And so you're resistant to it just because of your own experiences. And sometimes you think the curriculum is great, and you sit down with your kid and they just don't gel with it, and they are super resistant to it, and then it becomes a huge battle. So be careful of that as you're choosing. Avoid programs that require a great deal of teacher preparation. It sounds like, oh, this would be so awesome, I could do all these things with my kids. But if you're teaching multiple kids, your teacher prep is valuable. Your time is valuable. And so if you have a curriculum that requires 30-minute setup for every subject that you're teaching, you are going to hate it. But if you can, you know, plan your week and know exactly what you're going to do, and then you pull out the box and it's got everything that you need in it, and you can just do it, then you're going to do it. Whether that's unit studies, whether that's textbook-based, the least amount of teacher prep is the best. Unless you, like, there are certain subjects that I will do major teacher prep because it's my passion. And so it's really not a big deal for me to spend that time. But there's other ones where I don't like the subject in the first place, and to spend hours preparing, I won't do it. And I've learned over the years not to buy curriculum that requires me to do that. Okay, this is the biggest one. Expect to waste time, energy, and especially money. This is part of homeschooling. It's an experiment. And the reason it's an experiment is because no two children are alike. So what worked with your oldest child and your third child and your fifth child isn't going to work for two, four. You know, it's just not. And so, because they learn differently. And so you may have to adjust your curriculum so that meets the needs of all of your kids, or be prepared that you're going to have to, you know, start this child on this one, and then know that you're going to change at some point when your next one who's not compatible with it, you'll have to switch to a different curriculum. Number seven, be aware that there are various schools of thought concerning the teaching of any subject. There is no one way to teach math. You may think there is, but there isn't. And each person who teaches math thinks that the way that they teach math is the only way to teach math. Anybody that sells a curriculum thinks that their way is the only way to teach math. But that's not true. And so there's many different ways of doing it, and sometimes the way that you would never have thought is the one that works for your kid. And the one that you're least familiar with is the one that works for your kid. And so you just have to be aware of that. And just to understand that every philosophy here has produced great people and great scholars, great human beings. And so there is no one curriculum. If somebody tells you this is the only way to homeschool, they're wrong, because it's family-based, child-based. It is not based on a particular philosophy. So once you understand that, then it makes it easier for you to let go of your fear and just pick one and try it for a while and see how it works for your family. Okay, so anybody have any questions?
So in 30 years of homeschooling, have you tried everything?
I've tried everything. I've tried everything. And I've drugged boxes of books all over this country, because some of my curriculum I can't get rid of because I can't give it to anybody because it's too bad. And then others, it's like, okay, this is an awesome curriculum that worked for this child but isn't going to work for the next two, but I'm saving it because I've got grandkids that I'm going to use it for. So the finish your question, did you want to know which?
What's your favorite?
Okay, I homeschool with the Charlotte Mason / unit studies method because I had 10 children. My first four are, they're less than 5 years. So they were like a litter that just went through my homeschool. And so it was much easier to do unit studies. Plus, they had learning disabilities, and that was a way for them to learn without having to read. Without putting the emphasis on, you can't read, it was, okay, let's try reading again today. Okay, that didn't work. So let's go on to whatever else that we're doing. So they did not feel that they were stupid. That was my big thing, is I did not want them to feel stupid. But unit studies allowed them to be able to explore the world without having to put all that pressure on them. And they were all ADHD too, and so I didn't have to have them sit at a table. So that's what I did. Yes?
So with some of these methods, it seems as though it's either a choice between really structured or not very structured. And what if you know that your child would be very good, or he would thrive in a not structured, he loves to play, that's his priority, not sitting down and writing is it. And so, like, if you're just basing it off of your child, you know, it almost seems like unschooling or relaxed would be the way to go. But as me as a teacher, I know I'll have goals that I would like to be able to mark.
So you're more structured for yourself.
I had all these kids, and most of them didn't read. Every other child had a learning disability. And then they were all, a lot of them boys, and then they didn't like to sit still. And so, but I need structure. I have to know that these certain things are happening. So what I did was I provided the structure, but within that structure they had freedom. So, okay, this is our, we used Konos curriculum. So this is our Konos time. You will sit here, this is what we're doing, but within our Konos time, you can choose between this or this project. So they got the freedom to choose which one they did, but the underlying, okay, I'm going to read to you for an hour, and we're gonna, you know, do this and that, and then you're free to pick one of these projects. And so it provided the structure that I needed and still gave them the freedom to choose what they wanted to do. And you can do that with unit studies or the unschooling or even the Charlotte Mason, you can do that with. Some of the other, it wouldn't work as well. Yes?
Sorry, one more. And this is very pretty specific because I had been thinking of doing the Jenny Phillips curriculum.
Uh-huh.
What style is that?
It would be a traditional schooling because you sit down and everything's provided for you and you work through it. But that doesn't mean you can't cherry pick it. So you can say, okay, I'm going to use the language arts, but I'm going to do a different method for science and history.
It also fits in well with Charlotte.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Because they're short lessons and they're... it's not just sitting down and doing all language arts. It's got other things thrown in it. And so, yeah.
And like, well, the science lessons are really short with her, and I like to supplement them with really cool activities and experiments. And
yeah. So you can take any curriculum and make it into work for you. But it requires more effort on your part as the parent because you're not just going to sit down and do exactly what's there. You're going to say, okay, I'm taking this framework, but I'm adding these pieces to it, and then you can make just about any curriculum work.
You said that Thomas Jefferson is a mixed.
Yes.
So
like they take their core learning and then their love of learning and then their scholar phase, those all actually follow the classical education model. They just call them different things. And then a lot of people do Charlotte Mason for the love of learning phase. And then, you know, you could do classical education for the high school age. And so it's a framework that you plug stuff into. Does that make sense? Yes, you totally. This one you cannot. Yes, this one you cannot do unless you've done a lot of extensive research on it. Okay.
What do you do with your smaller kids while you're, if you're like sitting down in textbook, doing the textbooks and stuff?
It depends on the child. I've had, I call them toddler tornadoes. And, you know, the kind that pour 5 pounds of honey on the dog, you know, that kind of thing. And play Hansel and Gretel with the refrigerator so that you know exactly where they've been in the house. So those kids have to be contained. And the way that you do that is you rotate through toys. And so the only time they get these toys is when you're doing school. And you contain them in a safe environment, and you can turn your back on them for like 2 seconds and then focus on what you're doing. Or the other alternative is to do school during nap time so that you can give. And what I would do is the kids that struggled with reading, then we would do that part of it while the toddler slept or the baby slept so that I could give them my 100% attention. And then the rest of the stuff, the toddler was, you know, we're doing experiments, blowing up the kitchen, and the toddler's right there making messes with everybody else. Yes?
In this table at Charlotte Mason on the weaknesses, it says, may neglect higher level studies because of emphasis on art, literature, and nature studies. What does may neglect higher level studies?
In other words, you're spending so much time on the fine arts that you neglect science and math. But that doesn't mean it has to be that way. It's just that a lot of the curriculums are written that way. And if you feel like they need more science and more math, you just structure their time so that they can do that, and you can still do Charlotte Mason.
Like the traditional method for those.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So our child is, would, the teaching method would be Charlotte Mason would be a great application. We're able to teach our child, but how does that work with like math? Because traditional is not the way that you learn.
Then for that particular one, you would do more hands-on stuff. Yeah, there's a lot of games, and it depends on what age they're at. You know, it only takes 80 hours to teach everything that you need to know from beginning math up to algebra. So parents stress out because my child doesn't know math in kindergarten. Oh, my child doesn't know math in you know, they're 8 and they can't add. They will eventually figure it out. It needs to be age appropriate, and so there's lots of things that you can do to do math without them having to sit down and fill out a piece of paper. And there's lots of curriculums out there that focus on that, and games and that kind of thing. So they're short 10-minute lessons that they can do, and they're still learning the concepts without having to write anything down or sit there and cry over a workbook page that they have to do. Anybody else? Yes.
Sorry. Okay, so this is the hard part that I'm trying to figure out, is that between traditional and unschooling, I would feel like would be where we want to live. Like, as far as I can, in the weaknesses, it says that there's a high burnout because it's hard to keep up, and if you fall behind, which is initially, I was looking forward to homeschooling because then you're not really on the same schedule. And my son, who is ADHD, who has a hard time sitting still and doing the writing assignments and everything, like just from your recommendation, what would be the middle ground between all of that?
Well, eclectic is where you would go. Eclectic means you pull a little bit from every place. So the things that you really want to be traditional about, that he's willing to cooperate with, then you pick the traditional method for that. And then the things that he struggles with, you find other methods. So you decide, okay, the Charlotte Mason method is going to work better. A Charlotte Mason-based curriculum is going to work better. Or something like that. So that anybody that's homeschooled for any length of time starts cherry picking. But you still have to understand your philosophy so you know what you're cherry picking. So once you decide, okay, so for me, Charlotte Mason worked really well for my kids for reading and for math. But when and the other aspects of it. But for history and science, I wanted it to be more rigorous and more hands-on. And so unit studies worked out great because I was able to be as hard on them as I wanted to be, but they were playing and they didn't realize it. Does that make sense? Like for the botany, we did a botany unit, and my sixth child was 6 years old. And she was in first grade, she couldn't read, and so she had dyslexia, and so sitting down and having her read was really difficult, and it had become a battle. So I just said, okay, fine, we're done with doing any kind of reading with her. But she did the botany unit with us and just was right there with everything that we did. And the way that we always ended our science units was we would play Jeopardy, and everybody had a 500-point question that they had to answer to be eligible for any of the prizes. And that was, to me, the most important thing I wanted them to get out of that unit study was this particular question. Well, so it became neck and neck between her 12-year-old brother and her over who was going to win. And they're going, question and question and question and question. She won. She's 6 years old. But she won because she had been paying attention and he had not been. And she ended up beating him. But traditionally, you would say that a six-year-old could not possibly compete with a 12-year-old. But yeah, they can. And people would say, well, because she's dyslexic, she needs to be in the special ed class because she can't read. Well, her only handicap was that she couldn't read, had nothing else to do with her education. And so when you provide these opportunities for your kids, whatever curriculum you want can be as rigorous as you want it to be. You decide that level. And if your kid is really good at science, then you're gonna wanna push them and you're gonna wanna make it as rigorous as possible. If it's reading and they can't read, then to push them that hard isn't fair because they don't have the ability to do it. And so that's where you balance it out. And eventually, when the contention is not in the learning, they learn. It's when you push them and there's contention in the learning, that's when they stop learning. It doesn't matter whether they're a genius or whether they're learning disabled. It doesn't matter.
I feel like I'm in that contention in the learning phase right now. So I feel like I've gone from a few different kind of curriculums with just this first year, the first kid that I'm trying to do homeschooling with. And how long do you see something, it's not working, and you switch it?
Okay, so like how old is your child?
He's 10.
Okay. And what is he throwing fits about?
Math. But he's super smart. He understands it. He's a smart kid, so I haven't what his learning, what he needs to learn.
It might be the learning method, because like she was saying, he doesn't respect, it could be he doesn't respect the teacher because of, you know, because when you're teaching science, you're not as up on the science, so he doesn't trust you for math. So you need to find a curriculum that he does trust the teacher, and then he will stop arguing with you because he's not arguing with you, he's arguing with the curriculum. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And one of the ways to tell whether it's the curriculum or it's a parenting problem is if you remove the contention and you walk away and distance yourself from it and say, okay, I still want you to do this, but I'm not going to be part of it. If they do it, then the curriculum isn't the problem, it's you. If they're still having problems, then it's the curriculum. Does that make sense?
So you could change it pretty quickly. If you're
yes.
That.
If you walk away, you should know pretty quickly.
Well, I just started, I have twin 8-year-olds and just started in January, and they cried with math, and this was eye-opening to me. I realized just by switching the layout on the page, it was too condensed, it overwhelmed them. I went to a page that was much looser, and they immediately were fine.
Mm-hmm.
It can be as simple as that.
And sometimes when you hand a kid a math page and say, do this, sometimes they're rebelling because you're making me do something I don't want to do. Or they could be rebelling because they're saying, I am overwhelmed with what you're asking me to do. Like with one of my daughters, the only way that I could get her to do a math program was she would do a problem and then she would do a pirouette because she was into ballet at the time. And she would do a pirouette and then she would come back and sit down and then she would do the next one. With my son that I my youngest right now, we were really having problems with his math, about the same age as you. They get to a point where they don't like to be bossed around. And but if you say, okay, you tell me how many pages, you set up games, how many problems can you get done in such and such time? Those kinds of things. Then it becomes, okay, I am either bored with this curriculum, or it's, like she said, the page layout is wrong and it's stressing them, that kind of thing. Okay, one last question. You had one over here?
Yeah, so we are planning on homeschooling the first time. We're going with Tech Trek in Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
Something similar in Utah. They give you your tax money back.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
But the catch there is you have to take the state test. Mm-hmm. So how do you integrate the children to prepare for something that you're not teaching to?
Okay, here's the thing. Homeschoolers score unbelievably higher on those tests than public schools, even if there's no test prep done by the parents at all, simply because when you put so much pressure on a kid to pass a test, and the kid knows that they have all this stuff that they have to learn, and they feel stupid trying to do it over and over and over again, it creates a stress that keeps them from being able to do well. But if you just send your kid in and say, hey, you're going to take this test today, you'll be fine. Then they take the test and you'll be fine. And so I wouldn't stress about it.
Also, we tend to teach to mastery. You don't just...
Yes, exactly. And that's another thing that... Yes, where you're teaching until your kid gets it. And the schools can't do that because they've got too many kids in the class. And sometimes...
I found that schools put so much pressure. My son he's in second grade, and he was like having a panic attack before the state testing this last year. Sobbing and just hysterical because he was so afraid that he wouldn't perform well.
If you don't make it a big deal, it will help them to not see it as a big deal.
And it's really not a big deal. Mm-hmm. Even if they fail that test, that doesn't mean that next year they will. Mm-hmm. It just means, okay, when my kids had to be tested, I would use that as a benchmark for me. Okay, next year we need to focus more on this because we didn't cover it this year. Not because my kid's stupid and homeschooling isn't working. It's because, okay, we need to put a little bit less emphasis on this and a little more on that. Okay, thank you very much.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.